Good morning. I'm not sure if the applause was excitement from everybody to see you or the other song leaders glad to have a break and have you back. But seriously, it's good to have you guys back. I wish you guys could all see Tyler out at camp because it's a different Tyler than we get to see every Sunday. I was hoping you would wear the battling little bunny foo-foo outfit this morning, but I did see that, yeah. I might have taken a picture or two, so there's always a PowerPoint background to be had. It's good to have you guys back. We do miss you when you're gone. A couple of important events to tell you about that we have coming up. One, a very big, important, everyone needs to be a part of kind of thing. Coming up on September 13th, we will have our homemade ice cream supper. And the more ice cream, the merrier. So clearly, you all need to be here for that Sunday evening on September 13th. If you do not have an ice cream freezer, like our family growing up never did, I never had homemade ice cream until I was in college. And somehow missed out on that, but I really enjoy it. But if you do not have an ice cream freezer, or you do not want to break that thing out and go through all the headache of churning and all that stuff, just grab one at the grocery store and bring it with you. But for those of you who do like making ice cream, we will gladly sample your talents and have a good time with that. But that will be coming out on September 13th. Also coming up on the 19th of September for the men here, there is the Men of Iron event in Corvallis at the Circle Church of Christ, where we will get together and talk about man stuff and Bible stuff. And then we will go watch Oregon State play and try to learn about brotherhood and setting differences aside. So, you know, I went to that last year. I didn't go to the football game. I just went to the event at the church. And I don't know that I really have completely comprehended just how big a barrier that can be. In Alabama, where I grew up, we had the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Auburn Tigers, and you did not cross those barriers in any way. And the high school state championship of football would alternate between Auburn and Alabama's stadiums. And I always thought to myself how disappointed I would be if I played high school football and it was the year of Auburn, and I had to go to their stadium for the championship game. But anyhow, I know it's a big barrier for us to jump across, but we can show brotherhood. And if you are brave, you can wear your Oregon gear to the game. Like several of the Circle guys wore their Oregon State stuff to the basketball game that we hosted last year. So I hope you'll think about being a part of that. There's a sign-up sheet on the bulletin board out there in the foyer. And whether you want to just go for the morning of the men's stuff or go to the football game, we would love for you to come and be a part of that. If you'd like to open your Bibles to John chapter 13. John chapter 13. We find an interesting story here in the life of Jesus as he continues this this lead up to his crucifixion, where he probably does a lot of the things that you and I might not think of to do. I don't know what you would think of if you knew that death was near and not far away, the kind of things you would want to do, the places you might want to see, the experiences you might want to have, who you might want to spend that time with. But what Jesus does here in this story is not one of the things that would be very, very high on my list. We read beginning in verse 1 that it was just before the Passover festival, and Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Even knowing what was coming, the first thought in his mind was love. Love for those people that he cared about, love for the people around him, love for the mission that he was on. And I like to think we would be there too, that we would be thinking of others. And you may have experienced this with somebody. You may have been near someone as they were close to death, and the things that they talked about sometimes were theirs, sometimes things they might have regretted or things they might want to fix. And other times it was just things they wanted to leave with you, things they hoped you might remember. I remember several years back, my uncle, who was like a dad to me, found out he had pancreatic cancer. And he fought that cancer hard for a year and tried all kinds of different treatments and just progressively got worse and worse, and then reached a point where he knew there was nothing ahead of him other than death. And he would get weaker, and he would have a harder time talking and breathing, and he would need help around. And he went from this guy who was He was a mountain climber. He was a marathoner. He was a brain surgeon. He was in charge of things in life. He was a powerful guy, a wealthy guy, and an incredibly fit guy to the point where he needed help to get up and move around his own house. And it was a struggle to watch all that. And as he got closer and closer to death, and he reached the point where he knew that talking was even going to become more of an issue for him and would take a lot of his energy, he started pulling in those who were closest to him and telling them what he wanted them to know. And my cousin Chris, who was just a kid at the time, he was probably 11 or 12, he said to him, you've got to be the man now. You've got to take care of the family. You've got to make sure mom's okay and your sister's okay. And to an 11 or 12-year-old, he probably thought a whole lot more grand things of that than what it would be. But it was a thing that he wanted him to know. To me, the last time I saw him, I was struggling in college. I didn't know for sure what I wanted to do. I had bounced around several majors. And he pulled me close there where he was laying in his bed one day, and he said, you got to finish. You got to finish that thing. And I said to him, I will. I will finish it. And to each person, he would pull in and he would have something he would want to say. Jesus has these moments with his disciples, in the later part of John especially, where he is trying to convey to them things he wants them to know before he leaves. And he begins this in love. Because this is the man who will tell them that the people will know you're my disciples because of your love. Not because of your infighting, not because of the clothes you wear, not because of the building you go to or what's on the sign, but because of your love. And he's going to bring an example of that to them here in John 13. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. He was going to enter into a time of betrayal. And we see that the devil is already at work here. And I think we can look around in our world and we see the devil at work sometimes. Now, we might disagree on where that is. We might not completely understand what he's up to. But what we learn here in verse 2, I think, is huge because we realize that even when the devil enters into the picture, God is still in control. Because this whole plan that's going to unwrap, although it's horrible for Jesus to have to go through, is the plan that God had in mind from the very beginning. It's the plan we talked about the first Sunday I stood up here a year ago. God would have this plan where he would try to reconcile his people to him, and even the devil is going to play a role in this plan, probably unknowingly, understanding what God has in mind. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. He had confidence. He understood what God had in mind. He understood what the plan was, and although he might not have been a fan of that plan at all times, because what it would mean, he had confidence of what God would do. And we might ask ourselves this morning, what do we have confidence in? You know, we've already had the sports discussion already about going up to Corvallis and going to that event. You might have confidence in your team, and when they let you down, you're sad. You might have confidence in things that go on around you in this community, and when they let you down, you don't know what to do with that. I wonder, do we have the level of confidence in God that we need to have? Because to this point, he has not let us down. Now, part of our struggle with that, I think, is how we define being let down. Because if we were in the midst of what Jesus is going through, we might feel a little let down. We might feel like it shouldn't be this hard, it shouldn't be this difficult, it shouldn't be this painful. I shouldn't be betrayed by someone this close to me. And yet God, working through all of these things, still has power. And that power should bring us confidence the way it brought Jesus confidence. So there they are at this meal. And you might have thought to yourself somewhere along the way, or had that question asked to you, if you could sit down and have a meal with anybody throughout the course of history, who would it be? And you probably have some of those historical figure answers. You might have a relative that has passed on that you'd love to see again. You might have somebody that you've just always, a famous actor, actress, singer, TV star. And then you might have the religious answers, someone like Joseph or Jacob or Jesus. They're sitting around at this meal, and Jesus gets up. Now, their meals are a little different from our meals. And I try to imagine this we usually have meals when we do back there in the fellowship hall. I try to imagine our ice cream dinner a few weeks from now. And if we all went back there in the fellowship hall, and instead of these tall tables and chairs that you're used to seeing, you have a little short table, and each of us just kind of reclining. laying down next to the table and eating this meal. And so when someone stands up, it's going to be a little more noticeable than someone just getting out of their chair. He stands up, takes off his outer clothing, and wraps a towel around his waist. And after that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Their feet. I don't know how you feel about your feet this morning. I don't like my feet. Don't like them at all. They will remain within shoes. I have a pair of flip-flops at my apartment, and those flip-flops will go on if I am at the beach, or they will go on if I am at camp in the showers. They will go on if I desperately need something from the car and can't find a pair of socks. But that's about it, because I don't want you to see my feet. I'm not happy with them. Now, I don't think that people in Bible days really cared all that much. It's a little different than our culture now. There weren't a lot of folks in Bible days going down to the mall, getting the pedicures and all that stuff. But what they did do with their feet is they walked everywhere. And we have some of this, I think, here in Eugene more than in the average place, because you can get around this town pretty well, pretty safely, walking, riding your bicycle. But these guys walked everywhere, in their sandaled feet, out in the sand, dusty roads. They walked and they walked and they walked. And by the end of the day, their feet were probably not all that pleasant a thing to deal with. But as was custom, they would wash their feet in some settings, and that was a low and menial job. I don't know what the equivalent is in our culture, because we don't do a whole lot of foot washing, but if you think of the job that you just feel like is slightly beneath you, or maybe way, way beneath you, things that you don't want to do, I'm fine cleaning the toilet at my house because that's one of those things I do. Not fine cleaning the toilet at your house. That's your job. There are places I want to serve. There are places I may not want to get dirty and get involved in that. This was a low, low job. And to have someone who has described himself as the Son of Man, someone who Peter has confessed as the Messiah, the Son of the Living God, someone the people have tried to make king multiple times by force, someone who just entered into Jerusalem to all these palm branches a few days ago, and now here he is, and he is wrapping this towel around his waist and beginning to work his way down the line of the table, washing their feet. Kind of uncomfortable, isn't it? I debated about bringing somebody up here this morning with a basin of water. And then I thought, the uncomfortableness for you and for me, it's just not worth it. I've done this with a group of teenagers. We had a circle of people, and we washed the feet of each other, symbolically. And even there, just a little bit uncomfortable. But to have Jesus, probably the one that, if anything, you might want to wash his feet to make some sort of symbol out of it, he comes around and begins to wash the feet. And person after person has their feet washed. There's probably a little bit of a murmur in the room, a little bit of maybe that pin drop kind of feeling in the room. And then he comes to Simon Peter. And we know something's got to happen here because it's Peter. This is what he does. And so he comes to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" He's questioning. And honestly, we've been told again and again, there's no such thing as a dumb question. This might be the one. Because he's washing everyone's feet. Why would he just come along down the line, skip Peter, go on to the next guy? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But Peter has some sort of point to be made here. And he says, are you going to wash my feet? And Jesus says, you don't realize what I'm doing, but later you will understand. And maybe if there's no message we get from this morning besides this, we can leave here better people. We don't always understand what he is doing, but later we're going to understand. I don't understand why things are so difficult sometimes, but later I'm going to understand. I don't understand why I have to stand by the bed of a dying 49-year-old man with cancer who's trying to tell his son that he's the man of the house now and telling me to finish college. I don't get all that. But later on, I can see and I can understand. Yesterday, I talked to his son. He called to wish me happy birthday. I guess it was Friday. Had a neat phone call with him, talking things through. He told me about the surgery he had performed that day. He's a brain surgeon now. And we were talking about brain surgeries and spinal surgeries and all this stuff. And I said, you know, I don't know if I've told you this story before, but I got to scrub in and watch your dad do surgery one time. And he was like, really? And I said, you know, it was an interesting thing because I scrubbed in and I watched and he's doing a spinal fusion. And he's putting a fusion between the fifth and sixth and seventh vertebrae. And he does one thing and he's trying to get this bone that's going to go in there. And they take a frozen bone and they start to water it down. And the first time he did it, the bone cracked. And so he gets a second bone. These are all from the bone bank, people that have donated bone over the course of time. Gets the second one, and he waters it down to put in, and that bone cracks. And then I got to see an irritated brain surgeon. And that brain surgeon got on the speakerphone in the operating room, and he told the guys at the bone bank to get a good bone down there, or he would send someone down to find one himself. And I hear quiet on the other side of the line, and then I hear a quivering voice say, "Yes, Dr. Shank." And everyone in the emergency room or in the operating room is quiet. And I remember sitting there thinking, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And as I'm relaying this story, my cousin starts to laugh. And he said, I always wondered if it was genetics or experience, because he's had some experiences just like that. And I thought, you know, I hate what he's had to go through in life, but I love the moment of getting to tell him that story. I love the fact that there's a piece of his dad that still lives. And would I have planned all of this out that way, or would he have planned all that out this way? Absolutely not. But can we still see God working? Oh, yeah. If we stop and look and look around us and see. So later you will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. Now, I don't know what you want to do in life, but my suggestion to you is not to look God in the eye and say, no, you're not going to do that. Although we spend way too much time doing just that, don't we? No, God, that's not my plan. That's not the way this needs to happen. It needs to go this way. It's simpler. It's easier. It makes more sense. And Jesus says to him, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Peter has other ideas. Jesus is not going to be taken off track here. And he says, this is part of what we're doing. And so Peter says, well, if my feet getting washed is good, then not just my feet, but my hands and head. Let's get fully clean here. The Jews believed in this idea of ceremonial cleanliness, and how better to be ceremonial clean than to have the Son of God do the cleaning and know it's done in the right way. And yet Jesus says, I know you want more, but that's not what we're doing here. That's not the point of it. And so let's look more into what we need. Jesus answered, those who have a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. And if you are clean, though not every one of you, for he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean. He knew. Now, we had at the beginning of this story that the devil had already started working on Judas. And I know we have the assumption that runs through us that God is all-knowing and Jesus is all-knowing, and this couldn't come as a surprise, but now we have it just said in words to us. He knew. Now, I don't know how you feel about the foot washing or whatever equivalent you've come up with in your mind this morning, but as I'm working my way down this line of disciples, Peter's already asked me if I'm going to wash his feet, and we went through all of this. When it comes to Judas, I'm okay skipping that chair. Not that guy. You know, you've been good to me, 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 but this guy, no, not that guy. Let somebody else wash his feet. Or let's let everyone know right now just how unclean he is, and we'll just keep moving on. I've already talked about how important it is to wash feet, and I'm going to skip him, and we're going to make an example out of him. As he goes around washing, we have nothing in Scripture here that would give us any inclination that he treats Judas any differently at this point. And that is absolutely mind-blowing. I know he says to love our enemies, but here we see it at work. I feel pretty good when I can get to neutral with my enemies. I can just get past the hate and disdain and wanting vengeance and all of those things. I can just get to a neutral level playing field. I feel pretty good about that. He says love. And then he gets to Judas in line and washes his feet too. That is the God that we serve. When he had finished washing their feet, he put his clothes, put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them, do you understand? And maybe that's the question we ask ourselves this morning too. Do we understand what God has done for us? I think we get bits and pieces of it. I think there are probably days that we wake up and get through the day and feel a little more of what God is doing than other days, but I think there are probably a lot of days that we just don't completely understand what he's up to. We don't understand how blessed we are. I celebrated a birthday on Friday, and thank you, by the way, for cards and messages and all of that stuff. I am on Facebook from time to time, and every year on Facebook, if you're not on there, your birthday is advertised if you put it on there, and people send you birthday wishes. And I'm sure that they've got seven people in their Facebook group that have the same birthday, and for a lot of folks, it's they make happy birthday out, and they hit the copy button on their mouse and paste it down those seven birthday, and it's fine. And every year I see these names, and I remember, oh, that's my connection with that name, and it's kind of cool to see them again, and it's kind of neat to know that they remember, or at least Facebook reminded them today of my birthday, and I remember all those relationships and things. I don't fully understand every day how blessed I am to know you. I don't fully understand every day how blessed I am to live in the family in which I live. I don't understand every day how good my wife's chocolate cake is. And how, as great as the homemade ice cream is going to be, if there's a homemade cake that follows it, it's all good. I think we forget some days how blessed we are. I think we forget some days how much God is working because it's not always happening at the speed or in the way that we want it. And to this group, he asked them, "Do you understand what I've done?" And I would imagine this might be another of those pin drop kind of moments where they're all mulling over, what's the right answer to this one? You know, we're not going to say something wrong here. We're going to hesitate a little bit. "You call me teacher," he says in verse 13, "and Lord, and rightly so, for this is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I have set you as an example that you should do as I have done for you." This is an example for us. Now, when you think of Lord and you think of teacher and you think of people in authority and people with power or people who are famous, this is probably not a setting you usually put those folks in. Regan asked me the other day when I was talking about, we were talking about the Pepperdine Lectures, and she said, "What is that place you talked about where you see famous people when you go there?" And there's this place in Malibu, the Coffee Bean, that if you sit down and you're on the patio there with your overpriced cup of coffee, you can sit, and if you sit long enough, you will see someone you have seen in a movie or on TV or something, and it fascinates me. What I don't expect if I walk into the Coffee Bean and sit down at my table is for the time that Martin Sheen walks up, like he did one time when I was there, to walk up with a basin and a towel and to sit down in front of my table and to begin washing my feet. I don't expect Martin Sheen or whoever the famous person might be to walk up to me and say, "Which of these cars is yours?" And for me to just say, "Well, it's just a rental, but it's the green Altima over there." And for him to say, I'm gonna wash that while you're having your coffee. Is that okay?" You're famous. You don't do those things. I don't expect if I go to visit the White House, whoever is in residence there, if it's somebody I like or somebody I don't like, and if I go on the tour and I see the Lincoln bedroom and I see the Oval Office and I see all these places and I walk into a room and there I find the president standing there with Secret Service surrounding him, for him to say to me, "I've been waiting for you," and for him to sit me down at a grand table there in the dining room and to serve me lunch. Those are not things that happen. You don't expect those folks to serve you, and yet this is who Jesus is. This is what Jesus does. And Jesus says, as an example, this is what I want you to do too. I'm doing this so you can see how it should be done, which is a huge reminder to us that whoever you think is beneath you is not beneath you. And we sometimes need to be hit across the face with that. These people are not beneath us, whoever they may be. Because if they're not beneath Jesus, they are surely not going to be beneath us. And whether that's a social thing, whether that's an economic thing, whether that is an ethnic thing, whether that's a what land you come from, whether that's a what you believe, what your political party is, or whether it's servants and masters, any of those kinds of things, they are not beneath us. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Greater is an idea we need to get out of our heads sometimes. Because they're not greater than us, and we're not greater than them. We're all created to glorify God. We are all kind of on that same playing field, And it's about time we start to treat each other in that way. And for each of us, that means probably lowering ourselves a little bit. Because as we lower ourselves, hopefully others do too, and we start to see just a bit of who we really are. Now that you know these things, because you remember early on, they didn't know. They didn't understand, and he said to them, later, you'll get it. Now, I don't know if the later they had in mind was later in this conversation or somewhere down the road where it all starts to make sense. But he says to them here, now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. And I will submit to you that sometimes we are very good at the knowing. We are very good, if we can't quote Acts 2:38, we can remember something significant happened there. And most likely we know it had to do with baptism, and it came at the end of Peter's lesson and all of that. We're good at knowing there are 66 books, and there are 39 of them in the old and 27 in the new. We're good at knowing facts. We're good at knowing maybe situations from Scripture, characters and what they did. It's good to know this story about Jesus and washing feet, but he says not just to know it, to do it. And that is where the challenge faces us this morning. Because as we leave here, we now have had two times in a row where we've talked about something that's very important to Jesus is that we serve other people. We talked last time about that judgment scene and about when I was hungry, you came to feed me, and when I was thirsty, you gave me a drink, and you came to visit me when I was in prison, and we didn't see that we had done all those things for him, but he said, when you do it for the least of these. And now this morning, we're reminded that he looked at people around him as people to be served. People who would question it, like Peter. People who would sit and in their minds questioning it, like probably several other people at the table, wondering if this is the guy who really should be washing my feet. People who would betray him, like Judas. And he went from person to person to person, and he treated them all the same. He treated them all as people to be served. So if he says, as I have done, then you need to do, then the third question we need to ask ourselves this morning is, am I doing it? And for a lot of us, I don't know that we are. Now, we may not think that we have been in the situation where we can, or we're waiting for the program to start, where we can be told where to go and where to serve and what to do. I will tell you, there is opportunity around you all the time. There are people that just need to see that they are loved the way that Jesus loves, and they need to see that we don't think we are greater the way so many people do. And most importantly, they need to be served the way that Jesus has shown us how to serve. And I honestly don't think, probably for us in Eugene, Oregon in 2015, that is washing feet. Now, you could do that, and you would probably make an awful lot of people incredibly uncomfortable. And people do, and I understand the symbolism of it. But I think for us, it is a question of, what is the thing we feel is a little beneath us, and the person we feel is a little beneath us, and how can we get ourselves into check to realize that they're not? How can we serve this week? And God will open those doors for us. And we may not understand all the time when they're in the midst of it, but we can, in the end, understand that we are following the example that Jesus set. So this morning, if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, I can't even think of what I could have done to serve. Nothing's happened this week that would have been an opportunity. I can't think of any people that I've encountered. Think harder. Because I guarantee you we have all encountered that this week. We have all run into people that need to see the love of God. In this coming week, I challenge you to add that to the things you're praying about. We're praying for 5 families to come our way. And it seems like they might be on their way. Maybe some of them already here. We've been praying for rain, and I'm pretty sure I've heard on and off this morning between rests of the singing. I've heard something on the roof. I loved waking up to it today. And as our prayers continue to be answered, this is another thing we can pray for. Who are those people in our community that need their feet washed? Who are those people in our community that need to be reminded that we are not better than they are, that this is a journey we are all on together? This morning, if you look in your own life and you think I'd like to do better at that, we would gladly help. I know I can look into my own life and see that I'd like to do better than that. If there are things in your life that we can pray about, we would love to pray with you, cry with you, rejoice with you. Or if you would like to become a part of this family, we would love to see you baptized this morning and start this new life following the Lord that would wash your feet. Whatever needs you may have, please come as we stand and sing.